Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Jim. Just wonderful. Just enjoying this wonderful weather in Florida. Waiting for a hurricane to come in and give us some showers.
Welcome. I'm glad it's down there. I don't like to deal with those things. But obviously, welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 84. And this is actually going to be a continuation of last episode, Questions and Answers Part 2. We've had so many questions that have come through that have we feel it's important that we get an opportunity to kind of get these out in the airways and everyone have an idea or at least an opportunity to maybe learn from the questions that are being asked of us. So bear with us. We'll try to get through as many as we can. We did good last time. I think, Han, we went through at least 4, if not 5. I don't know if we're going to get into that many this time because these are kind of heavy questions that we've got on our table tonight. But let's kind of just jump right into it. The question that was raised, and I think this is one we're seeing quite a lot, hearing quite a lot about, is if I want to do a 6 operatory practice, what happens to the size of that space now that we have to deal with COVID-19 and all the issues around it? And I think that's a really good question for anyone who is looking to do something. Obviously, if you're looking to do a new practice or you want to do a renovation or you want to do something, you're going to say, okay, what's COVID going to do to the old rules? And, you know, and we've always had those old rules about so many square foot per operatory, which kind of took into account circulation and administrative space and clinical areas and that kind of stuff. And actually now that's all kind of up in the air because of so many things that are happening around how we deal with COVID. Let's talk a little bit about let's just start at the beginning of the, when you walk into the practice, what are you going to hit?
So, You want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me take a shot. Okay, I'm gonna throw out this disclaimer. Okay, mainly because the topic and the question is still very, very new, still very fluid. You know, when you look at the old rule, that involved the design, design ratio and number of operatory per treatment room, all that stuff is somewhat are in question. The main thing is if you are, let's say, majority of the listener, I would assume is in a position where they're in an existing practice. So they have a physical space. Most of our clients usually approach a project with a very limited amount of square footage because it's everything is associated with cost. You don't want to lease and most of them are lease space. You don't want to lease more than what you want to use because it doesn't make sense to dump a lot of money into a facility that is too big for you. So the big question is, if you have an existing space, what can you actually do to make sure that you are, if I may use, COVID-19 compliant? We don't, from a design standpoint, we don't set the rules. We basically comply to whatever regulatory, body that tells us we have to meet this requirement or meet that requirement. so that they would give us the blessing and give the, you know, the practice the certificate of occupancy to open the door for business. So let's start with, you've got an existing facility. The very first thing that we would encourage you to do is to consult with a design professional to really assess what you have before you, you know, call Bob the Builder to come out and start tearing down walls and stuff like that, and get yourself in trouble or dumping money into doing things that you that doesn't get you anywhere. All right, because the assessment of what can actually be done, if it can be done, how, you know, how it will impact your office, you know, what will you give up and what is required to do that. For instance, one of the things that one of the big question is, you have a semi-open treatment room. You have no door. You have doorways, and one way to you know, to improve the air quality within that room, within that treatment room, is to add doors onto those treatment rooms. That's easy enough, right? No, it's not that simple. Okay, if anybody tell you it is, step back a little bit. Here's what we see. If you have an existing treatment room that is, let's say, 8.5 feet, 9 feet, in width, if you have one door or two doors, the first thing is, when you put a door onto that treatment room, it may trigger the requirement associated with American with Disability Act. Okay, that's one of the very first things, because when you have a door on there, and if the ADA require that you have a certain amount of clearance on the left side of the door. So if you're within the treatment room, you normally are not allowed to open the door swing out into the, you know, into the corridor. That would be a disaster. So it swings into the room, because the door is swing into the room. The clearance from the door, the door frame, to the closest obstruction on the wall is 18 inches. So if you got a 12 o'clock cabinet, that's where the 12 o'clock cabinet starts. Okay. If you have two doorways, two door opening, then the problem is, if you close up the smaller or the second opening that was designed for the assistant to get out, you know, in and out of the room. The challenge, the first, you know, the big major question is, if you want that door, how big can your 12 o'clock cabinet be? Because that door for the assistant, don't have to be ADA compliant, okay? But because of the ADA compliant for the primary door, and now you take off approximately 12 to 14 inches off of your 12 o'clock cabinet. So you have just a tiny little thing to work with now. It does that work. So some of the question is, it would affect the way you function within that treatment room that was not designed to be function in that, you know, in that new change. So it's not that simple to simply say, I just throw a door in there. Okay, treatment room may have to be designed to accommodate, whether you have cabinets on the side or not, the door dictates, the number of doors dictates the width of the room, unless you, of course, you have it at toe entry, and that's a different, that is a totally different model, but that's one of the solutions. Okay, so the physical size of the of your practice will change. How much change? Perhaps a little bit, 5-10%, we don't know at this point. But it will change based on what all you want to do to accommodate and or meet the thing we call COVID-19.
So, Han, what you're saying is there are options. depending on the options, will greatly change the potential number.
Yes.
Yeah, because if you go with a double door, 12 o'clock rear cabinet, you're not going to do an 8 foot six wide. It's not going to work.
No.
It's going to have to be. It's going to have to be around at least 10 feet, right?
The last I look, let's just see hypothetically. If you want the door. Yeah, if you want to have a primary door, typically it is a 36 inch wide. You have a 2 inch frame on each side. You want a little bit of space in the corner so that you can do the, all the carpentry work and stuff like that. The assistant door is 2 foot wide. That leaves you with, and you want your 12 o'clock counter to be about 36 inches wide. Okay. The room need to be approximately 10 foot four.
Yeah. I just did the math, and I was going to say 10 foot would be bare minimum, and 10 foot four would be more realistic. And actually, 2 foot wide for an assistant door is pretty skinny.
It is a utility door.
Yeah,
mainly,
it's usable. Don't get me wrong. It's usable. You can do it. But just keep in mind that a 2 foot wide door is pretty skinny. So, you may get some pushback from your staff to say, hey, I got to turn sideways to get in through this door. And a lot of times most people do. Most people have to turn sideways to get through a 2 foot door. And
especially if you have trays and stuff like that you're carrying out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And exactly. So, I mean, I'm not talking about the physical size of people. I'm talking about the ability to actually transition through. And so, you're right. If you've got a tray or if you've got a cart or if you've got a piece of equipment, whatever it is, it may not go well through a 2 foot door. You may have to bump up to, a 2.6. And you do that, you're at 10.8?
You look at, let me see.
Four plus six.
Look at that and see. No, you don't, maybe you bump up that door to be a 2.4 or 2.6 to give you a little extra girth. I don't necessarily have the other door. There is trick in the tree that allow you to have narrow door and still meet ADA requirement. But your design professional would work all that out.
Right. And so I guess your point is, when I say there's options, there's a lot of different ways to effectively solve this problem. But keep in mind, the days of 8 foot or 8 foot four wide operatories are probably gone. Unless you can live with a single door going into your operatory, you're probably not going to be looking at 8 foot wide ops anymore.
Yeah. You see, because if you are in a facility, it depends on how everything is plumbed. Okay. It's not as simple as throwing the door and just flip the chair, because if you plumb the room so that the chair is the head of the wall and not at the toe, it's head entry rather than toe entry, then all the plumbing is at the toe of the room. If you flip the chair, then your plumbing is in the wrong place. Okay, so there's a lot of utilities and things that affect what you can or cannot do. Okay.
This all holds true for new construction just as much as it does renovation.
Absolutely.
For new construction, the good thing about it is nothing's built, and so you have a lot more options out in front of you that you can then make a determination, as opposed to renovation, where especially if you're like a slab on grade and you've got all your underground utilities in the concrete slab, you know, you're tearing stuff up. You're cutting up floor,
yeah,
and you're reworking things to rearrange and reconfigure. That tends to get pricey.
And not just pricey, but it's very involved and messy. You know, it's not something that you say, hey, you know, we're going to shut down on Friday, and, you know, we make the changes over the weekend, and then we're open for business on Monday. Okay, that don't work that way, because
nope.
every time you touch your utility system, it needs to be modified, inspected, and all that good stuff. So it's become a very arduous, very expensive, and time-consuming, and very disruptive. So you may have to be shut down to make any changes. Okay, we have been approached with dentists who say, I had come to the conclusion what I have will be more costly to modify, and at the end of the day, I'm not going to get what I'm really, really looking for and affect my the practice, the function, the flow so much. I need to go and find a different location. And maybe that is the salute, that is the answer. But again, have somebody, have a design professional help you out, look over things just so that you get the proper advice, and not just simply somebody drive a pickup truck and have a utility belt tell you we can do anything. Jim?
Yeah, and it takes 2 weeks. Everything's 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. How long to make that change? 2 weeks.
If I get a quarter for every time I heard that.
2 weeks.
Two more weeks. Yeah, two weeks. Yeah, that's
the
funny.
2 weeks. That used to be the joke in the construction world that everything takes 2 weeks, even though it may take two weeks times 10, but it's still two weeks.
I had a college professor that his typical answer is no problem. No problem. And you get no answer except no problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, typically.
Well, and that's just the one area that we're talking about in an operatory. There's several other things that can affect the operatory size. And that's going to be things like filtration equipment. You know, maybe the standalone stuff, the stuff that's at the patient or the stuff that's within the room. So that takes more space depending on what it is and how big it is. The whole idea of are we going to now design for the companion to be in the operatory space? What do you think about that? I mean, typically we always like to have a companion in the space, but now that's gone away, hasn't it?
That's gonna upset the apple cart really, really bad. Okay, because whether you are a general practice, a pediatric or orthodontist, particularly for the pediatric and orthodontist, you're dealing with young children. Okay, and so a lot of them are a little bit more flexible. Some are a little bit more. More lenient and allowing the patient, the parent or the companion to go come into the room. And the debate on that topic could go both ways. You know, some go like, no, that when the parent is in the room, the child acts up, they become worse, more difficult to handle, versus, just let us take the child and take care of them and return it back to you. And then you have parents who are just absolutely, I gotta be in the room because I don't want you to hurt my child. Okay, and so it's gonna be very interesting. We're dealing with COVID, and that's basically right now. That's the hot button, the hot topic, is that most practices are now not having patients come into the waiting room to sit. They come into the parking lot, check, say, I'm here. They come out and they get you and walk you straight into the treatment room. So the idea of having a companion just to come in and sit in the waiting room, have coffee and watch TV waiting on you, it's It's almost gone. Okay.
Let alone take them all the way back to the operatory itself.
That's right.
And okay, I understand. It's just like, you know, myself and my wife. You know, we live in the same build house. We're together all the time, and so effectively, we're not going to expose each other any more than we already do. All right, so that's understandable. So you're within your family, understandable. But it's the other issue, is that you're taking two people into a environment that is a higher hazard. So if someone else in the other operatories is effectively contaminating something, if you don't have the necessary systems in place to cut back on that contamination and or eliminate it completely, you've effectively doubled your risk exposure to two people as opposed to one. And so it becomes a numbers game. It really does become a numbers game. And we see the hospitals doing it. And so yes. If the hospitals are going to do it, then why would we as dentists and dental designers and dental architects do any differently? I mean, they, you know, you go into the hospital for procedure, you, the patient, go in, you know. Your companion, my wife, she doesn't go with me, okay? It's unfortunate, but that's the case. If I go to a doctor's visit, you know, for example, you know, I go over to the Cleveland Clinic for my heart. If I go over there, she doesn't go in with me. That's the way it is, unfortunately.
Not anymore, right?
Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore.
She always went with me on everything, but not anymore.
Yeah.
And so that, because they don't want to risk the double exposure to two people as opposed to one. And so the exact same thing is going to happen in the dental office, specifically the operatory. But like you say, even in the lobby, the lobby itself, you know, you're not going to have snot loads of people sitting there waiting for, you know, their husband or their wife or their companion. They're going to be out in the car.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, I've been to a clinic recently, and, you know, you come into the parking lot, text them, and they come out and they get you. You don't only the patient go in.
Right.
So it's you know, things are still very fluid, but right now that's the condition. Okay. Some of the big question is, what do I do with my existing space? Okay. That's a good question. We don't have a solid answer at this time. You know, you have, let's say the old rule of thumb is if you have an office and you have six treatment room, how many chairs do you have in the waiting room? All right. And so for every treatment room, you take 2 to 2.5 seats in the waiting room. So you can have anywhere between 12 to 15 chairs in the waiting room. Well, if you taking patient straight from their car into the facility and you have no companion waiting in the waiting room, that room become basically dead space. Do you want it? You know, so, you know, on the bright side, do you want to convert that into a useful space like a treatment room? No, because you don't know what's going to happen when maybe, you know, a couple months down the road and say, oh, you know what, we discovered that COVID-19 was just a, you know, was just a fictitious little creature and we can go back to normal.
Fictitious on, but let's say that they did come
I
up
know,
with,
I'm just being but
they come up with a vaccine. And, you know, if you can come
right.
up with a vaccine and effectively knock this thing down to a much smaller, less contagious animal, things may adjust slightly back to normal. I don't think they'll ever go away. I don't think this whole aspect of what we're doing will ever, ever go away because, you know, today is COVID-19. What's it tomorrow? Or, you know, what's it next year? Or what's it going to be in 2 years? We've got to learn from this. And I think it is a situation that, you know what they say, if you don't learn from the past, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, let's talk a little bit about that lobby itself. Obviously, the lobby size is a whole issue. I mean, what they're now saying is you got to keep people 6 feet apart. So, you know, like, you know, Dr. Bill's place over there, originally, you know, he had a really large lobby. And right now, with the 6 feet compartmentalizing kind of thing, he's got basically four chairs in that lobby area, where before there was what, 8, 10, maybe.
He had two waiting rooms, one for the adults and one for the children. They both are the same size. You know, he has a 12 chair practice, which is going to expand to 15. So the number of chair total is 24 to 30 chair. So the waiting room was designed for that, you know, that normal old rules. Okay, so now you have, even if you separate and you put 6 foot social distancing, you know, I think from a physical functional standpoint, to meet the guideline, it's going to look somewhat empty or underused. But the other aspect is nobody wants to walk into a business, and the first thing they see is their, you know, the reception / waiting area look like a shoebox. You know what I'm saying? It's they still have a level of presentation. You know, the psychological feel of is it welcoming or is it friendly or is it just like some place that you want to, you know, turn around and escape. So it's a thing that's still
style phone booth. Yeah, like the old style phone booth. You walk in it, you know, you basically turn it around and do your thing and walk out. So, you know, the days of what, the coffee station and the kids area, what do you think about those?
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk on a fair amount on the touchless type of accessories, of amenities. It's very difficult to have. I'm not sure there's a touchless coffee machine. Okay.
I don't know.
But mainly the days of having coffee where everybody's self-made. If you go to a gas station nowadays, I haven't really buy any coffee in any gas station since like spring. It's because the fact is, in the old days, it's like, you know, I only use the container that have not been opened, and I will open myself, make sure that nobody else has played with it. You know, Jim, you know, we're both about the same age. We grew up in that area. The very first national scare was known as the Tylenol poison.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's an unsolved case. It's an unsolved case where we are afraid to buy anything over the counter. Well, you go into a coffee station, and the last person there, they touch everything. Okay, I haven't run into straws that are individually wrapped on individual space that you pick it up, and you're the only one who touched it. I'm not germophobic, don't get me wrong, but people touch everything. Okay, I don't see a coffee station to be the selling point anymore, simply because it's just a place that, yeah, everybody mess with it.
Yeah, it's a big liability now. It's a big liability more likely needs to go. It'll end up going away.
And what another thing that you don't see very much of, and I think some discussion have been had, from the CDC particularly is that the plumbing code require that a drinking fountain be placed in businesses.
Yep.
Okay. A lot of people won't drink out of drinking fountain. Why?
Not now.
Even before, because it's
even before, but yeah,
time,
not now, without a doubt.
Not now anymore. I mean, it before COVID-19, it was just like, hey, drink at your own risk. I mean, it's a nasty thing. They're not usually kept clean, and it's, from time to time I heard the expression, it's a public spittoon, okay? If you don't know what a spittoon is, it's a place people spit in. So
yeah,
it's
look
nasty.
It up. Yeah.
All right? Sometimes building code allows you to have alternative, like bottled water or water dispenser and things like that. So it's it's another level of what do we do, how do we do it, so that way we can provide the amenities that people are accustomed to, and things like that. So, gosh, there's just a lot of things that have not been even open for discussion. So, drinking fountain may be a thing of the past.
Might end up going with individual containers or individual bottled water. But, at the same time, it's just like anything. This whole debate about mask or no mask and what's going to happen there. But right now, Ohio is under the rule. I think Florida is as well. And, your state may be as well. When you're outside, when you're in public, and when you're in the dental office, except when you're in the dental chair, you're wearing a mask. There's a whole debate on whether that's a healthy thing or a non-healthy thing. It doesn't really matter. Right now, that's what happens.
Yeah. And actually, this is a public service announcement. You don't have to wear your mask inside your car when you're by yourself. Right?
Isn't that crazy? I see so many people that are doing that, and it's like, okay.
Why?
Maybe they've got the most comfortable mask that has ever been created, and they just forgot that it was on, okay? And they're just driving down the road, listening to the radio, and they just forgot that they had their mask on. Okay, but I don't know about you, but I can't breathe through those things. Doctors, I don't know how you guys and girls do this. I don't know how you can breathe through these things for extended periods of time. It's just nasty, but... so the situation is, you're right. Don't wear it you don't have to wear it in the car. But when you're going from the car to your dental appointment, you're going to be wearing it as a patient. And so, you don't want them to drop it, to be able to drink some water or drink coffee or eat food or that kind of stuff. So that whole thing, maybe we're getting a little bit off the subject, but in reality we're not, because all of what we're talking about affects the size of the space. So it's going to affect the size of a new facility, because we're going to have to adjust things. Like Han said, you may not have a need for a larger lobby like we originally used to plan for. But there's some things you're going to have a larger area that may suck up some of that space. And one of the other ones is we've had this discussion in our seminars, and also I think in one of our episodes, is the whole idea of the in and out, meaning one way in, one way out, and you want to minimize the cross traffic as a way to combat social distancing and the spread of this particular virus. So that takes more square footage. Right, Han?
Yeah, it certainly will increase your circulation. It naturally, those type of designed feature are easier solved when you are designing a brand new facility. If you're looking at office space for your new practice and stuff like that, you may want to consider what it is that you're going to do. And so that way, the selection of the space could accommodate that design feature. A fair amount of our design goes into a shopping facility. So a shopping facility or a retail strip, the way they're designed, it's very difficult to convince the landlord that you need a dedicated entry door, dedicated exit door, all on a single bay in a facility that has a design rhythm. Okay, they're not going to let you punch in an extra door. Okay, so you have to look at look at what it is you want to have, and hopefully include a discussion with your design professionals that can help you to assess, analyze the space. So that way you pick out the right space to that can be designed to meet your requirement. But it's not something that you just simply go, we squeeze it in. There are things that, if you have very talented design people, they can solve a lot of stuff. But there's things that they just simply can't because there's no possible way. Okay? Yeah, so it will increase your circulation footage, but more importantly, that if your space can be can accommodate that kind of feature. Jim?
Right, and there's ways. I mean, obviously, if you've got a cooperative landlord, you ask, can we install another door? If that's not the case, then you create yourself a lobby. I'm sorry, not a lobby, but a vestibule that you have one way in and one way out within that particular thing. Still using a single door to break the exterior plane of the building. But, that's another possible configuration. So there's ways.
We've done it. That's right. That old saying, if there's a way, if there's a will, there's a way.
And we'll figure it
out.
Yeah. So, those things all impact. So right now, Han and I, we can't give you those generic rule of thumb square footages of six operatories, 400 square foot per operatory will give you a rule of thumb on what your square footage necessary for your practice. That doesn't work anymore. That formula is no longer. It's old and unfortunately not going to allow for your possible answers to a lot of questions. So right now, you have to really think about if you're looking at doing a new practice or if you're looking at doing a renovation, you have to think about what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and let your design professional know that. And hopefully you're working with someone who understands, like we do, that each one of those things have a pretty different effect on your total square footage. Juan?
Here's you're right. It's if you find a space, sign the lease, fall in love with it, sign the lease, and say, hey, I need your help. Hopefully, the I need your help comes before you sign the lease, okay? Because once you sign the lease, you're gonna find yourself in trouble, okay? There's things that totally affect what is required. Also, is the code, the building codes. For instance, to have your treatment room with all doors. Sometimes some municipality would say you need to have X percentage or minimum number of treatment rooms to be ADA requirement. Then if you have six, they may only require one, maybe require two. It all depends on your municipality. If you're really cursed and be in a municipality where they're really hard-nosed and they say, listen, doc, every treatment room with doors have to be ADA requirement. And you might say, wow, that's very unreasonable. Trust me, we ran into that. Okay? Now think of designing a 12 treatment room practice and every stinking room have to be ADA requirement. Can you imagine having a scheduled day where every person in your practice that come in that day in wheelchair? That doesn't happen. Okay? It doesn't even happen at the ADA national headquarters. But it's some municipalities are very unreasonable, and they will hold you to that. So, again, it will drastically change the size of your, you know, of your overall square footage that you need for your practice. Jim?
Yep, without a doubt. Well, let's we've blown through three quarters of our hour just on one question, but it was a multiple part question, so I'll give it more than just one. Now, the next question, which actually dovetails pretty nicely with what we were talking about, then the question was given to us was, okay, what if I've done something now? Okay, and then what if the regulations change, then what? So I guess the crux of that question, as I read it, is there's apprehension from the doctor's standpoint of doing anything until all of this jello kind of environment that we're in right now solidifies and there becomes actual regulations. And I guess that's a valid concern. At the same time, right now, there are no regulations. There are no rules and regs that have been given by any governmental agency. There's not been any code requirements. Nothing has been changed to deal with COVID-19 in the sense of the building.
Facilities.
Facilities, the building departments, the zoning codes. And, you know, those things change at a snail's pace. We're talking about years and years before a change is implemented and it goes through multiple hearings and tons of different committees, and it's worse than proverbial pulling teeth. So don't expect, I guess, in a general sense, don't expect there to be a hard and fast set of guidelines or rules from any code official or agency on the COVID-19. That's not going to happen for years. So I guess in a nutshell, Han, right? Don't wait for that to happen, because unless you want to wait 2 or 3 years before you reopen your practice, right?
That is correct. Right now, of course, everybody already are compliant, per se, to the CDC or the dental association's recommendations. You know,
right?
Added PPE. You know, added cleaning protocols. How do you, you know, how you manage the flow of patients into your practice and so on? Those are more procedural things than facilities. But from a facility, the only thing that we have seen, it's not a mandate, but it is a recommendation from ASHRAE, which is deal with mechanical, electrical, plumbing systems. Is that their recommendation is that you have a negative pressure room if you have aerosol generation concern. But again, it is a recommendation.
That's just a recommendation. So in actuality, everything that we've been talking about and everything that we're giving out to you as information is just that. It's a recommendation. It's not a hard, fast rule. It's not a requirement. It's not a do or you're going to get fined kind of thing. No, it's just a recommendation. But at the same time, the stuff that we give you is thoroughly thought out. Recommendations based upon our research and our knowledge. And so, Han, what do you call that? You call it value added, but at the same time,
yeah.
I guess the question is that, okay, if I'm a doctor and I decide to take some of our recommendations and I do some things, am I at risk down the road of being stuck and saying, oh, crap, I wasted a bunch of money? What do you say about that?
There is a couple approach. Some are physical, and then the rest is, I think, perception. Okay. Well, everybody know about social distancing, 6 feet. I have no idea how they come up with that, but we're not here to debate that. So to provide that social distance recommendation, because that's what it is. It's not a mandate. It's not a law. If you say, hey, you know, I don't believe in that, and you don't do anything in your office, the patient comes in and go, you know, my doctor didn't do anything pertaining to that 6 foot social distance, you know, a recommendation. They must not care. You know, my safety is not important enough. Okay. Well, let's see how much did it cost you to put in, you know, to separate the chair, to put in the plexiglass, the sneeze guard. I don't know of anybody who stands at the, you know, at the reception desk or checkout desk and sneeze without turning their head or sneeze without tucking their arm under their arm or something. They won't sneeze directly at you. But again, because, you know, it's a recommendation that you put a sneeze guard up between you and the patient to provide that level of protection, whatever that level is. If you don't put it up and the patient look in and go, everybody have it, but Dr. Smith didn't, okay, they will question. Even though you're the best dentist in town, they will question the level of care or whether you care. So it's almost like a catch-22, darn if you do, darn if you don't. Well, how much did it cost to put up the plexiglass or put that 6 foot social distance tape or decal on the floor or move the chair out? It's minuscule. Okay, it's just a few hundred dollars. So we're not talking about that. It's, you know, you almost spent that on a, you know, taking your staff out for dinner. More than that, I would assume. But we're talking about the big ticket items. Things that you put in and become the physical part of the building. Is it worth it? Well, you look at it, it's that things that may involve that we're talking about is investment into apparatus or feature that will improve the indoor air quality of your office. Whether it's involved COVID or not, it is a darn good investment. You can always use better environmental condition inside your office. Okay, so even if they change the rules, that improvement is a plus. They, you know, your patient don't see it, your staff may not see it, but you know it's there. You can tell them about it because it has helped to clean the air. Put in standalone filtration system. It helped to clean the air within the room. It helped to reduce the viral load because hopefully you're buying equipment that also have UV light that will kill or neutralize the virus. So it's, again, seeing that, knowing that you invest into equipment or features and apparatus that improve the overall environment that they're going to be in. Okay. The actual oral, vacuum system that are placed next to the patient that will extract or collect the aerosol generated when you do restorative procedures. Can you go without it? Yeah, you can. But having that, again, tells, it will only improve the indoor quality, reduce the amount of aerosol being spread around the office. It's a value added. It's an investment. So we see that kind of stuff, whether the rule change or not, it's a plus for your facility. It's an investment in your own health, your staff's health, and if you want to, put up a plaque, say, we did this because we care. The rest of
well,
the
stuff. Well, I think you need to.
If
you're going to, without a doubt, Han, if you're going to go into the systems of your office, be it a new facility or a renovated facility, and you're going to go in and do things like inline ductwork, UV light, or if you're going to go in with high filtration systems, or you're going to go in with standalone filters that have UV light in them, market the snot out of that.
Absolutely.
Let everybody know. Send out flyers. Put it on the airwaves. Put it in the cable TV. Any way that you market, you let everybody know that that's what you've done to provide a safe environment within your practice. Because, like Han, you talked about perception. Remember how?
Yep.
One of our podcast episodes a long time ago, where we talked about your first, your first impression. Is a perception. Your first impression of a building is when you walk up to it, when you walk into it. Within 30 seconds or less, your patient is making a determination on whether this place is a high quality place, it's clean, it's sterile, I'm safe, I'm comfortable, or they're the other way around and they may never come back. So, like you say, you could be the very best dentist in the county or the country. It doesn't matter if you don't have that kind of first impression and perception. It really doesn't matter. So market the snot out of it and let everyone know that that's what you've done. This stuff isn't cheap, right? I mean, it's not cheap, but it at the same time. Today's COVID-19. What's tomorrow? What's next year? What's next week? I mean, 2 years ago there was N1 and H1? Before that was SARS? I mean, what's going to happen next year? COVID-19.1? We don't know. But the systems that we're talking about, like the UV light in the ductwork or the filtration systems and that kind of stuff, will help you sterilize that room.
Hey Jim, there was something I read earlier. Today's only Tuesday, so I read it the last couple of days. A question that was posed. Do you want your patient to know that they're safe, or do you want your patient to know that they feel safe? Simple question, huh? Okay. There's a lot of manufacturers that sell equipment and they tell you, hey doc, I mean, take this baby and put it in your waiting room so that everybody see that you invest into this really, really cool piece of equipment. Okay. Your milling machine, for instance, it should be in your workroom because it's designed to, to create crowns and what have you. But because you invest in it, they say it's a selling point. It's a marketing thing. put it in the waiting room so everybody know that you just bought this really, really cool machine. You know, part of the marketing thing in the recent decade or so is that, hey, we have a TV in every operatory. Can you imagine that? We have a TV in every operatory. In fact, we have two. One at the toe where you're sitting up, and one on the ceiling where you're laying down. Nobody else in the, you know, in the community have that. We do. Come to us. Okay? That's how almost how silly your patient think. But it matters. Okay? Again, those equipment are not cheap, but it's an investment, and it adds value to your facility. And in the long run, it's better for your health, better for your staff, because after all, you and your staff spend more time in the facility than your patient will. Part of the return is that if your staff know that you invest in their health, they might be a little bit more loyal to you, and rather than jump to the, you know, to the next 10 cents or quarter increase in pay down the road at an office. Okay, it's again, I can't emphasize enough is that it's a value added for your facility, and if you look at it from, as an investment standpoint, it's worth it. It's gonna be there whether the rule change or not, it's still a value for your office. Jim?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and things like, you know, we're talking about the higher priced ticket items that involve dealing with systems and that kind of stuff. Sure. When you're putting in, you know, plexiglass partitions and sneeze guards and that kind of stuff, sure. I know that adds up. Every penny counts when you're trying to make it work. But in the grand scheme of things, those things are just temporary fixes anyways. If it becomes the norm over the next whatever period of time, then we're gonna be redesigning those on our new facilities, and you're more likely going to be redesigning them and replacing them with something much more permanent. So, like the bank, you know, like the bank tellers, the old bank tellers used to be, you know, where they were actually glass, tempered glass between them, something that's going to be more stable, because, you know, that plexiglass stuff will only last so long, and it won't be too long before it starts breaking and starts breaking apart or starts getting all scratched up and becomes unsightly, and you're going to have to replace it anyways. So it is a temporary Band-Aid right now, but it's like Han, you were saying, it's a perception. If people walk in and say, why didn't you at least go to the trouble of putting that kind of stuff up when, crap, my local grocery store or my local gas station, they did that. You know, it's the things you got to do anyway.
And really, if it becomes, let me say, a sneeze guard, if that's what they want to call it, become a permanent feature to or barrier to protect, the staff and the patient from sneezing at each other, you know, it would become a permanent thing. You would want to redesign your check-in, check-out so they become more, at a higher level of aesthetic and presentation. At that time, it's going to cost a bit more, but you at least know that it's permanent. But right now, it's, you know, a plexiglass installation costs you maybe $100 or more, give or take there. But at least let your patient know that you're on board with everyone trying to protect them. Because you care, not because they tell you to, but because you care. Okay.
Definitely.
It matters.
Yeah, it does. Well, hopefully it's been at least educational, and you've gotten something out of our last hour's worth of dissertation on all these things. We did, I think, cover quite a lot of topic, even though there was only really two questions. We're thankful for you being part of our show, listening in. And as always, you know, if you have a question, send it in. You can get a hold of us, call us on our number, get to our website. We're happy to answer any particular question you might have. If you'd like to have that on a one-on-one basis, you can get a hold of any one of us. But, you know, we're glad that you've spent the hour with us. At least you have a little bit more knowledge now that you can start making some decisions around. Who knows where you're at? You may be, yeah, I've got an existing facility, but I need to maybe get out of it. Like Hans said, you know, I want to do all these things and protect my patients, but it's going to cost me $1 million to do that in my lease space. Maybe I should just move to a new location. Well, you might be in that situation. You know, we'll help you make that determination if you want us to. Or you may say, yeah, I can make renovations. Well, we'll help you if you want to do that too. We can do that. Or you may say, you know, I'm done with this part of my career and I'm going to build a new facility because I want to do it right and I want it the best of all possible situations. We can help you with that too. So with that, Han, I'll let you have the last word and we'll let everybody get out of here.
Yeah, and the bottom line for everything that Jim said is that we can help you with everything. Okay. Again, it's been a fun hour. Appreciate you tuning in and allow us to spend the time and chat with you. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.